and welcome to the second season of Seniors in the Building. We are four friends exploring aspects of aging together. Our conversations run the gamut from humorous to serious to maybe outrageous. We hope to hear from new voices this year as we invite guests into our conversations. Thanks for being with us. Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Ageism. Today our topic is ageism. And we're going to talk about experiences we've had with ageism. But first, let me try to define it. Ageism often appears quietly, not as a single dramatic moment, but as a soft erosion of dignity, visibility, and possibility. When people at certain ages, especially elderly people, move through the world, the experience can feel like walking through a culture built for someone else, where expectations about energy, relevance, and contribution are subtly redirected away from you. In workplaces, in medical settings, in public life, and in everyday social interaction, ageism becomes a set of assumptions about what older adults can or cannot do. It's rarely openly hostile. More often it hides inside lowered expectations, unnecessary caution, or decisions already made for you without your voice. So let's think about this for a while. Is this true? And have we experienced it?
Oh yeah, definitely experienced it. Where you say, is this true? I think that reflects the idea that often if you bring up the matter of ageism, it's not taken seriously. People just think, no, we're not discriminating against you. It's just how you're behaving.
You're just old.
You're just old, and we just have to sort of, adjust society to accommodate you or to sort of neutralize you sometimes.
Yeah.
And well, that in itself is ageism. It's sort of the pat on the head, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Very patronizing. Yeah.
I remember the first time that I recognized that I was aging in the eyes of people around me, going to a restaurant and the server saying, "Ma'am, can I tell you about our specials today?" And I'm like, "No, I just want to read this menu. And please don't call me ma'am. I'm like 41 years old. I'm not a ma'am, you know." And it just hit me, like, I thought, darn, is ma'am the first stage of old age?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I get sir all the time.
Sir. Yeah. Yes, that's right. Yeah, which should be a sign of respect, but maybe not.
Can I open the door for you, sir?
Yeah. I'm sure it is. That's not their intent. I just don't think that they, people realize what they're doing to us, right?
It's very subtle.
It's very subtle, like you said. It's behind the scenes almost.
Yeah, just last week, riding the bus, or a couple of weeks ago, and it was quite full, and so I was just standing there holding on and feeling quite comfortable, but two or three people just offering me their seats. "Oh, you need to sit down." So finally one young woman, instead of me just saying no to her, she just stood up and basically left the seat empty. And almost, she didn't shove me down,
but
it was
she
almost
kind of
like,
bumped you and you
you need to sit down, old man, so and maybe I did, but I felt quite stable and comfortable. But there's that sense that maybe they feel they're being helpful. I think we've got to acknowledge that, but it still strikes you, that you're that feeble and frail.
Could be the white hair phenomenon.
They look at you, and assume something.
Yes.
And make those assumptions, like you said. I think the thing that struck me when you were giving that definition, Jack, was making decisions for you without your voice. I think that has happened so often to me, where those decisions were made, particularly in healthcare. I think because of my as I've gotten older, decisions made about referrals or decisions made about where you are in the line for getting a service or getting a treatment or getting something, I think that they look at the age and they think, oh, well, and then they take younger people before you, who maybe they think are more urgent,
or more deserving of that long-term medical
benefit.
Yeah.
Although I think I have seen it changing, changing as we are showing how long we're living, and they're starting to think, oh, a 70-year-old could live 20 more years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's starting to change, but not everywhere.
No. Well, I remember being younger in philosophy class in university, and then also ethics classes in seminary, where you have those conversations about, you know, well, you know, hypotheticals. If you could save someone who's in their 20s, you know, with limited resources, or someone in their 70s. I think old back then was 50s. And so that's right. So where would you put the resources? And almost without hesitation, most of us would say, being young, oh, well, of course, the 20-year-old, you know, without. And I think some of that is still there today.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For
I'm facing some surgery, not major surgery, but still. And I've been waiting quite a while. And I have this sneaking suspicion that I'm being bumped down the list because of my age, you know, or that I'm not very high on the priority list, even though I was told I was in the urgent category. So, and I suspect that that's part of it. So,
And when I was diagnosed with my heart arrhythmia 3 years ago, and I saw the cardiologist, I felt so patronized. He would say things like, "Well, you don't need to worry about that. You let me worry about that." Or,
seriously,
it was terrible. Yeah. And I'm not worried about you.
I'll take care of you,
you're
lady.
Doing fine. Exactly. Yeah. That is exactly how I felt.
Yeah, a bit of misogyny in
so there's
as well,
sexism right? combined
sexism.
With
ageism. For women, yes.
I think it was both.
And queer folks, yeah.
I think
you're getting the double whammy with it.
It was definitely.
And even if you think about the movie industry, right? Who gets bumped out of the prime leads, right? Older women.
Usually they suffer the most.
Yeah. They suffer the most, right? Not old men. They're still, Robert De Niro in there. They're still Al Pacino.
The silver-haired men always the leads.
That's right, yeah. And it's only when they fight back or they are the producer or the
director,
right? Producer and director. Then, and they have their own money. Can they get a film push through for somebody their age, right?
So I mean, one stark example are commercials during the daytime.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
You know, they're aiming at us.
Yes.
At elderly people who are fragile and in need of medication of some sort.
Yeah.
Or a walk-in shower.
Walk-in shower. Or, assuming we own our house.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sell it off for chip.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the acronym stands for.
So
or build
a
lift up
the side of their
steps.
Well, and I'm sure some of them are helpful, but the fact that they're targeting us is
during
assuming
the daytime.
These are all of the things we desperately need. You know, actually, on the medical end.
We're here, we're laughing.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Some years ago.
Insidious.
I heard this doctor, I think Dr. Brian Goldman, who has a program on CBC, talking about geriatric care, and one of the reason why it's lagged behind, it's becoming a set specialty now, is he said because often there is some medical complexity. Often, you know, seniors will present more. It's not like it's just not just the broken hip. There's also, say, the cholesterol issue or the heart issue, and he says sometimes medicine years ago, maybe still today, not trained to deal with complex medical issues.
Yeah.
So there's some ageism surrounding that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I know when my son-in-law was going through his medical training, the best piece of advice he got was, you need to know how sick or how well you want your patients to be.
Mm.
And that helps you decide sort of where you want to land in the healthcare system. So if you like your patients to be more well, or if you love the challenge of somebody who's more complex and that kind of thing, it starts to guide you. And I believe that we had a physician who couldn't deal very well with complexity where we previously lived. He was having a hard time sometimes with Jack, especially with his complex medical needs.
I took it just to be slow, to be sure.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. And dealing with complexity in a slow
but
way.
But I felt it was like he just was not...
Too many moving parts.
He couldn't put them all together. Yes, he really liked his patients. He loved me because I didn't go very often, and I took a lot of control for everything, and I didn't need it much of anything. And when I did go, was very helpful with those single issues.
Yeah.
As opposed to the person that we have now who seems to be able to deal with a lot of complexity and isn't fazed by it.
Mm-hmm. Where was it we saw a sign? Was it in where we previously lived or here that says
previously
to patients who are sitting there waiting, please only one issue?
Yes.
Oh.
I was thinking that in my head. I thought I was going to bring this forward.
Yeah.
Because I'm in a fairly new medical clinic with fairly younger
physicians.
And that is in there. That is in there. Not more than one thing. So I understand that it might be a time issue, so they can see more patients because we are in the shortage of doctors, right? I can understand that part of it. I can also understand that with each issue, then they get paid for an office visit, right? So then that helps with their overhead, you know? So I'm not totally dumping on the physicians for this, but it makes it difficult because I don't like to sometimes waste my doctor's time, right? So I tend to be those people, the kind of person who writes a list and makes an appointment and then finds out that, you know, it's a little more complex, and so we're going to have to look at this or that. And I had a doctor for many years who was able to do that. But in this clinic, it's a little bit different how it's operated. So it's going to be hard. I'm going to have to go every time with one issue now and think about how many times I go.
So make three appointments, consecutive appointments.
Yeah, and so then I feel like I'm a burden on the medical system, right? Yeah. So either way, it's an issue, right?
I wonder if you could say, I have three issues, I'd like three appointments.
I wonder,
consecutive.
Yeah, that might be it too.
I don't know. Like, I think it is. There is that. Seniors are complex, and if you, as a physician, don't like that complexity, then it makes it hard for you to deal with that older person in front of you, or even a younger person who has complex medical needs. I don't mean to say just older people do.
Yeah.
But
see, my maybe wrong assumption is that family practice physicians should be more used to complexity because you're dealing sort of with more the general person, and it's the specialists who would be more focused on a specific issue. Like, I don't go to a cardiologist because I have a rash on my ankle. That would be ridiculous, but I would perhaps go to my family physician because they deal with the whole person. So I would expect, maybe wrongly, that they would be able to deal with complexity more.
Again, it just depends on preference, because they might prefer younger families, and so sure they can deal with a younger family. That's
right.
that's their wheelhouse.
Yes.
But an older person, maybe not so much. And again, I think that was the case with the physician that we had previously.
Yeah, and the physician, the GP we have now is wonderful because I always take in a list on my phone, and it's never just one thing.
Yeah,
and she. When I went through the list, she actually said, "Is that everything on your list?"
Okay.
Ooh.
Which was beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
It was so affirmative.
So some are more prepared than others.
She can deal with complexity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to raise about this issue is internalized ageism, because I think I've internalized a significant degree of ageism, having had the heart issue and then the shunt in my head for walking difficulty. So I do feel aged.
Yeah.
And I don't mind if someone holds the door open for me. But there is the internalizing of it too that is very subtle, I think. We're sort of prejudicial against ourselves as fading human beings in, around this table at least, in our 70s. And I don't mind that.
Yeah.
But I think we, you're right. I think, Jack, I did too, but I think it was also somewhat of a social thing as well, right? Because I recall like a couple years before I turned 60 and a colleague turned 60 and all these things that went wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember them saying, you know, wait till you're 60 and you'll start to notice it, right? And then another colleague turned 60 a couple months before me and a major health issue arose. And there she was trying to deal with this too, right?
Exactly. So, yeah.
And then I'm thinking, I'm going to be 60 in March, and here we go again. And sure enough, right, there was, you know.
I heard that too from several women that I were close to when we lived in Alberta. And the thing that I remember her saying, one of them saying, was, if you make it through your 60s, you're good to go.
Oh, yeah.
So there's the same thing.
There's something about it, you know, it all just sort of...
That's an ageism perspective.
I know.
Yeah, that's because your best before date has run out. Something like that.
Best before, yeah, that's yeah. right.
No, you're not dead yet. Before date. Where is it stamped on you?
But the internalized ageism thing is, I think, important because sometimes... That can lead us to stop trying new things, to stop, and we've talked about that in many podcasts,
yeah.
but being open, being creative, trying to do new things. But I think sometimes that sense, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, so why should I bother? I think that's where internalized ageism can really be a detriment to us.
Yeah.
Or we can fight back, because I'm thinking about when we went bike riding in the UK in 2018, and I was 63, and I remember one of my sons saying, are you sure that 63-year-olds should be biking out in the open on their bicycles
in a foreign country?
Yeah, the country that you don't know, and you don't know the hell. And I mean, it was just, and really deep down, of course, there was this care for us and this worry about us getting hurt over there. And sure enough, on the first day, I hit a rain spot.
A wet spot. Bike slid into the curb.
And over I went into a rock wall and ended up being in an ambulance on the way 40 miles away to a hospital, right? And I said to Rick as we were in the ambulance, I said, don't tell the kids.
but it was a little hard after with your arm in a sling and little marks.
Is that when you broke your wrist?
Beat up. Yeah, I broke my wrist and I smashed and had bruises on my head and my shoulder was a little bit out of, there was all kinds of things, right? But it was like, don't tell the kids. Because it became a reality. This concern of theirs became a reality, right?
Oh, for heaven's
yes.
And but that ageism is in our children too, right? They've been seeing us.
They're protective.
Aging. Totally protective.
Yeah.
And so now they're
vulnerable.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, and like when we talk about taking a trip, there's just all this anxiety that sort of hits them.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, they're gonna take a trip. Here we go again. You know, like what does that mean? Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm really impressed with Rick being as old as he is, being able to handle GarageBand and the recording of these podcasts.
I know.
Well, you kind of take your time and learn, and sometimes you lose
patience. I'm kidding,
patience.
Of course.
Yeah.
No, but if you think about that in terms of when we were talking about doing a podcast, and we said, well, maybe we should check out the equipment. And we went to
Long and McQuaid,
right?
Yeah, the company.
And the young fellow, and the jargon was just pouring out of him, like, and I was like, I hope somebody in our group is figuring this out, because I'm not getting this, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And eventually, I think all of you got this figured out, what it was, right?
I think what's underappreciated for people our age, we're all in our 70s, is that we have learned bloody well to be resilient with new things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I sat down in Chicago when I was doing a graduate degree there in front of a manual typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I had to adjust to electric typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to adjust to a computer. And learning, and that was the dot, what was it?
They were the cards. You had to put the cards in.
No. This is the floppy disks. No.
Floppy disks. Yeah.
Yeah.
The big ones, 4.5 inches.
Oh, yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And then we had the hard.
The compact disc.
Yeah, more compact. Yeah,
compact discs, and now flash drives, and now it's the cloud, and yeah. So and that's
we
pretty,
adapt.
That's,
damn it.
Yeah, because that's pretty rapid change over a period of what 20, 30 years.
Yeah,
that's,
it is.
That's a lot of stuff to adjust to. Yeah.
And a cell phone was just science fiction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For decades
get smart.
In our lives.
Yeah. Get smart out of yeah. Cell phone.
He had a phone in his shoe.
In his shoe. Yeah, it was reality.
I remember that now.
Yeah.
Well, I had an experience when we moved from Alberta to Ontario. I was just, I think, 63 mm-hmm. or 4. And I had intended to continue working. I was going to, you know, I was
right.
wanted to
You're
find
still
a
pretty
job
young.
And keep working, yeah, mm-hmm. keep doing something. And what I encountered was bizarre, and I didn't identify it as ageism at the time, but it was. It was mm-hmm. really, I worked with somebody there who was an employment support person. It wasn't through EI or anything. It was a community service, and she was wonderful, but I think I had several interviews, and then I never heard back from anybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, it was just bizarre what kind of a wall there was there in terms of mm-hmm. finding something in my field. And I even went back because I did my master's at Wilfrid Laurier, which was in the town where we lived. I went back there and I used their services, their mm-hmm. Alumni services, and but nothing. And that's, I think, was my first real slam into the wall of ageism. Mm-hmm. And it was hard.
Yeah.
It was hard because I fully intended to keep working.
Going, yeah. And that's a huge barrier if you pay attention at all to older people. You know, if they're laid off, they lose their job, to try to find
another one.
Other employment. Because often they are just not
right now.
Considered. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I think at the other end of the spectrum, that's where a lot of teens and young adults right now are running into the ageism thing too, where they are not able to find employment. They're not seen as either competent with enough experience, or they're seen as just, you know, the jobs market supposedly all filled, and so you get this weird double standard out there. You know, always this crying for people. You know, there's no people to work, fill these jobs, and on the other hand, people who are employing are not hiring either. So what gives?
And they say they want to have an experienced person, right? Well, how do you get experience as a teenager if you're not ever going to get a job, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And so I think they're being discriminated against.
Yeah, there's some real ageism.
Where are the employers who are willing to train the people so mm-hmm. that they can work, you know, into the system and have opportunities to grow from that.
Right.
The other thing I remember about that sort of opposite kind of thinking about ageism with younger ones was when I was in my clinical pastoral education course, and there was a young Polish priest in the class, and he was probably mid to late 20s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking one day about how it's really hard for us to get jobs in the ministry field because we were women and older women, because second career women were going into the ministry at that time. And he just kind of looked at me and says, what do you think it is for me as a young person? They always say to me, well, we're looking for somebody who is good with children and is young but has some experience of working in a parish. And he's, where am I going to get the experience, right? And mm-hmm. I felt kind of bad for him that we had the experience, life experience. I kept saying life experience to him. We had the life experience, and neither of us two groups were getting the jobs,
we're
right?
Getting the jobs.
I wonder, too, whether this podcast that we do weekly
mm-hmm.
is a way to fight back against ageism.
Right.
In other words, to talk about how it is that we in our 70s now are still resilient, we do have accumulated insight, and we are emotionally insightful.
Mm-hmm.
We have emotional intelligence. We've been in so many relationships over the years, whether workplace or home or wherever. We know what it's like to relate to people a one-on-one in a sensitive way. For the most part, I mean, we can be insensitive too, and I mean myself
and know-it-alls,
included,
like,
and know-it-all. Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have assets that we can put to the fore, and that was the impetus for this podcast, I think.
It was. Yeah.
To get it started.
About having agency.
We're not done yet.
Yes, that was a mantra. You know, and I wonder, part of that is our whole culture. You know, the Western or the industrialized or post-industrial culture, that you need to be sort of productive. You know, in some cultures, and even in Western culture in the past, elderly people were seen as founts of wisdom. You know, there was certain status that you gained, whereas now often I think ageism shows that we are not very productive, so therefore we just kind of, you know, push them to the side and maybe nicely indulge them, but you know, they've really got nothing to contribute anymore. I think that's a real factor of ageism. We're seen as non-productive people, and I think that creates a lot of prejudice, discrimination, being pushed aside, and I think, yeah, that's why we need to push back.
We're not contributing to the marketplace as possible.
We're not contributing. And I mean, you see some of that, not so much here, but south of the border, where there's this attack on Social Security. And the term that's often used is, these are entitlements, as if someone's trying to claim something that really they shouldn't be having, when in fact, you know, the reality is they're not entitlements. But often entitlements is used in a very pejorative way, and often directed at senior citizens.
Yeah. Paying into the system all these years.
Yeah.
It's not something that's an entitlement.
Yeah, but something, I think, again, that reflects sort of the ageism.
It's a benefit.
Yeah, it's a benefit, not an entitlement. Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah. I guess one area that strikes me, too, that we ran into recently is in the insurance industry. With life insurance, there was one policy we had, and we hit age 70, And the premium rates, I mean, they more than quadrupled just overnight.
$71
wow.
all month for years and years.
Yeah, it's pretty
and
standard.
Then
and all
$500.
Of a sudden, yeah, just like and so I,
oh
well, we sent you a letter, but we didn't have your current address. Which is, I don't know. And then, well, because of your age, you hit this age category, and you go, well, how would it be like that? But that's a real. So we canceled the policy. I mean, we didn't have any choice because it basically became unaffordable.
I did the same thing with my university pension.
Yeah, you just can't.
It was ridiculous. It was like $1,000 a month or something.
And they've been making, the insurance companies have been making money off of seniors.
Yeah, we paid into
it. We paid into it for so long for some percentage of risk, but not for the whole darn thing, you know.
Yeah.
And so they actually have the advantage and the benefit more than we do.
Yeah, you kind of question almost the legality of that, you know, how that can be, but it's in the contract, so,
interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
Mm.
Yeah, it was just an odd thing that we didn't notice in the policy, but it is ageism for sure, you know. I think the other thing I was thinking about was in terms of social inclusion too, right? That there are certain programs that are offered to many people, and they often will say, you know, up to the age of 50 or whatever, right? And and you'll think, well, okay, I guess we shouldn't be in a computer program after post 50, right? Because what do we need it for, right? We're not going to need it in the workforce or whatever, you know. So it's laid out for certain age groups, right? An age demographic.
Are you talking about learning
opportunities? Learning opportunities, or even just clubs, or you know, things like that. That there are some rules to that. Or I noticed the other thing that's been really noticeable, is the veterans legions, right?
Oh.
I noticed that now they're doing a lot of advertising looking for young people to participate in legions, right?
Oh,
because for so long you had two criteria, right? You had to be a veteran or a veteran's family member in order to be in the union, right? In the Legion, right?
Yeah.
And now suddenly you're anybody can come and join the Legion. Any age can be there. We'd love to have young people, right? And I'm like, look at that, how it's had to change too, right? Even within its own structure, right?
Yeah.
It's changing its mandate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially. It's having to change its mandate, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, what I'm thinking still, somewhere in my mind struck me about being aware of ageism against the younger generation.
Yeah.
And I first became aware of that when I was still in grade school. In grade 7, we had to ride the bus every day, riding on a school bus. And then one day, for some kind of reason, was taking a charter bus. And the difference in the seating, the difference in how the bus operates, like you've seen them all, like whether it's a, you know, I mean, with the reclining seats and a nice smooth
seats,
and actually even the bathroom on there. And I thought, wait a minute, look at this tin can we're riding in. And that's true till today. You know, everyone says, oh, we just value our children. They're such our precious little things. And you look at what the school buses look like compared to, say, a charter bus or, you know, one that you can pay more for holiday tours and that, and you go, this is crazy. There's a real distinct discrimination going on there. So, and I remember thinking of that when I was younger. I thought, this isn't fair. Not that I've done much about it, I guess, you know, because school buses are still pretty much like they were 60 years ago.
They are, except you can't ride on a school bus unless you're so tall.
Yeah. That's right.
No, because our granddaughter couldn't ride a school bus until like just recently.
Yeah.
She's a little petite thing, so she wasn't tall.
Gabby had the same thing.
Well, so it's sort of a safety issue they consider? Or,
they have to be tall enough to sit
above the bar that's in the seat ahead of you.
Yeah, I know. They have to sit tall enough to be seen.
Mm. Yeah, and then they also have seat belts now too, though. So that's
do they?
And some.
Oh, that's true. The seat belts is a new development. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wonder if some of that what's presented to us as which is ageism, is couched around safety. And you know, earlier on we were joking about all these products that come at us advertising, like the lift up the stairs and the
walking
walkers,
bath.
The walkers and all that. Is that a concern for safety, and where's the gray area, right? There is a gray area, because we all understand sometimes there are hazards that face us as we grow older and issues.
That was always, when I worked in home care, that was always a big issue between home care and acute care, because home care, we always had the approach that people have the right to live at risk.
Yes.
And they can make choices. They make their own choices. As long as they're informed choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And have the competency. I mean, there's also big issues around competency that you have to be very careful about. But and then they end up in acute care, and acute care is putting up all the you know, the bed rails insisting on people using this, that, and the other thing. And and it becomes very evident the difference between...
Different philosophy,
Exactly, safety.
Yeah. So in our Charter of Rights, we need the right to live at risk. That sounds kind of appealing.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Until something happens,
you have the right
to live. The wrong choice.
And you have the wrong choice, that's right, yeah.
You have the right to choose to go on a trip and take the risk of having an accident or not, right?
Yes.
That's your right to do that.
Yeah. Like driving to L.A. on my own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes,
there you go.
Have the right to
see,
do that
you have a right to do that.
Yeah.
I wonder, too, whether language we use has built-in ageism. I'm thinking of the friend who I shared the podcast with, and he listened, and he says, I don't like being called a senior.
Oh, yes.
It has a pejorative ring to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For him, it did.
Yeah.
For me, no problem, but for him, it did. And the same with the notion of elder. Like, what does the word elder evoke in our minds? It probably varies, but...
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's someone who is aged, and wise.
Right.
But also subtly sort of set aside as a category.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a social construct then, and how we use it. Yeah. Because, and I think we shared this one time, maybe not, but in the indigenous culture, elder doesn't necessarily mean a person of a certain age, but certain wisdom. So it has a different meaning. But I think in our sort of Western settler culture, it's elder is, someone who, you just kind of push them into a box.
I wonder if it's more putting them into, using the notion of elderly or elder more symbolic than participatory.
Yeah.
Mm. Is the assumption.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with that term elder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You wonder about that too. And also is that what's happening in society as well, not just in indigenous society? Is that what's happening? We're this symbolic kind of population or demographic, right? And we can say, in Canada, this demographic gets taken care of in seniors' homes and assisted living and whatever else, right? That we have a place for them. Because, of course, they're our elders. They're the people who've, been around for the long haul or whatever. So sometimes that's kind of hard to...
So we're ready to be warehoused?
Warehoused. Oh, warehouse. I love that. Warehouse. Yeah, I love that language because I kind of wonder about that too, right?
Hmm.
As long as there's a walking tub in the warehouse.
Mm-hmm. But
go ahead.
I was just going to go on what you were saying, Jack, even warehousing, right? Because we have also done that intentionally because we've internalized our aging and we have gradually bought homes which have less care for them and less space, square footage, because as we age, we don't want to have to have certain job, housekeeping jobs and responsibilities, right?
But I guess I see that as expressing our independence because it is our choice. We're making the decision.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things coming out of this conversation is that ageism, like you said in the introduction, Jack, takes away our sense of agency and other, decisions are made for us.
I think
the language used was diminished our dignity, our possibility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And, I worked in the field of seniors housing and that whole thing. And I am of two minds. I think there are brilliant facilities out there that allow people to live at risk, and they create home-like atmospheres that are not sort of warehousing or institutionalizing people.
Right.
And there are philosophies of care that contribute to continuing to honor that person and their history and who they are. And then there are facilities that don't do any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I think we in this country have good intentions potentially, but I don't think that we don't have a patch on Denmark.
Yes.
And their villages where the people can with dementia can roam and they're freer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're not institutionalized.
Participating in community.
Participating
with
in community.
Freedom to do
and,
that, right?
Yes. And the environment adapts to them. They don't have to adapt to the environment.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
I think that's the difference. So it's that is a tough, that whole and sort of as you need more care, what happens?
Yeah.
Question.
Well, I think one thing that makes me hopeful is that now there is some recognition of ageism. I mean, I think that's a term that wasn't even existing when I was a young child, even though I complained about sort of being discriminated against because of age. But I think, ageism and then the recognition, like you say, in Denmark, that there are appropriate ways to, allow people to age with dignity, with a sense of independence, with still a sense of belonging to a community and having value. And that includes people with, with dementia, that there are ways to do this. And I think that's a real plus. That's a real positive. We just need to keep moving in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think too that we pose a problem to society by virtue of the demographics. We are becoming the dominant demographic.
Mm-hmm.
In most of the G7 countries, the aging is a major issue because the workplaces are left empty, especially factories,
mm-hmm.
where older people are not participating in manufacturing, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the young are preferred. And so as everybody's struggling with an older population, and ageism is one of the responses to it, negatively.
An older population that doesn't work? Or what do you, I'm not sure what you're saying.
Yeah, that is not in the factories, not able to do the manual labor required. Hence the impetus for bringing in the immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Many from all over, young people who are willing and able to do what we as mm-hmm. elders or seniors choose not to do or are unable to do.
Unable. But I think that increases our population diversity. I see mm-hmm. that in a way as a good thing. You know, we're not doing it ourselves as, you know, the second or third generation, but having newcomers come in, I think not only keeps, you know, the economy, if you want to use that term, moving, but I think in factories and that, but it also, I think, increases our diversity. And I think that's a plus, yeah.
So back to this, our demographic being a larger, that also means having a bigger voice, like having mm-hmm. a bigger impact on issues. If we as a group were working towards something or mm-hmm. felt something needed to change, or mm-hmm. I think our demographic has a lot of clout sometimes to change mm-hmm. things.
Yeah.
When we do it as a group, as a demographic group.
Mm-hmm. Well, political parties tend to call seniors for their opinions, uh-huh. try to figure out, you know, or if they're city planning, you know, they're looking at that. They often will call up the seniors to get an opinion, right? Because you're looking at that larger demographic that uh-huh. might impact what actually is going to happen, whether your project's going to get off the ground
or not,
or your program or whatever, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That they're checking the pulse, you know, of that big mm-hmm. big demographic.
Well, and there's that, I think, reality that a lot of what you, if you want to call it the term, senior citizens have, is that as you get older, you tend to care less about what other people think. And some of the yep. filters disappear. So often if you see these video recordings of people at town halls and that, often people at the microphone who are shouting the loudest and being most aggressive towards, say, a corrupt leadership or whatever, are the senior citizens. It's like, well, okay, I don't care what you think of me. You know, I guess there's an advantage. I'm not going to lose my job, so I'll just stand here and yell
soon.
At you and,
yeah.
and call you to account. So there's some pluses to being our age too, even if we're feeling ageism in our bones.
Well, yeah. Well, I think today's topic was about ageism, so we're focusing on that. But in the big picture, you know, it is something to be aware of, mm-hmm. something to counteract. I know that I'm always saying to people that when they want to carry my bags or open my door or something, they say, no, I can do it. If mm-hmm. I don't use it, I lose it. So that's a typical response that I have.
Right.
and I say, go ahead, thank you.
And Jack is the opposite. And thank you for doing that.
You know where some of that comes from, right? That comes from a gender situation, right?
Yeah, probably.
Right? Because you're used to being
taken care of,
right?
Yeah,
and
I wonder.
And we are,
we're the fragile women,
right? You know, and so again, sometimes
and the
that's
solution to that is automatic doors that open, so you don't have to hold doors for each other. There we go.
And maybe that's the end of this.
Yeah, well, thanks for listening. Do remember that we would love to hear what your thoughts
yes.
are about ageism, whether or not you've experienced it, and if so, how or mm-hmm. how not, by emailing us. And our email is, and I'm going to ask everyone to remember this, the numeral four, seniors
in the building.
In the building at gmail.com.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for spending this time with us on Seniors in the Building. If you enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love for you to follow us. Join our growing community. And keep sharing in the stories, wisdom, laughter, and life as seniors. Until next time, stay curious and seek hope. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral four, followed by seniors in the building, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. You can also leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design, and Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input and the support of all of our families in this endeavor, for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love.